Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
Good morning. Welcome to Medicine on Call. Today I want to give an update, I guess. It's important now, all the supposed changes that are coming down the pipe for the healthcare system. I don't know if you heard yesterday, Dave, but let's see. The deal between Anthem and Cigna is no longer happening, which is great because Anthem is one of the worst insurance plans out there. Humana and Aetna's merger is off, and Humana is going to be leaving the exchanges completely next year. So maybe this is somewhat of a stabilization of the insurance market, because it was becoming too big to fail. I mean, it kind of already is, though, or at least they want you to believe that. But imagine if we'd gone from five major insurance companies down to three. Or maybe even two, I think it would have been at that point, we would really have some issues going on. So that's dodging a bullet, in my opinion. I'm not sure what the Republicans are going to do. They've been back and forth on repeal, repair, replace. Who the hell knows what they're going to do? But the good news is that we have the HHS secretary, Dr. Price, is actually in. And the way they crafted this monstrosity of a law is the Health and Human Secretary has ultimate power. That's a czar. So he gets to decide what rules and what regulations are in it, are out of it, and he can craft his own. So I think that's one of the reasons that they fought so hard not to have him in there, because one, he's a legislator, so he understands how a law works. He's read that thing, and he's also was a practicing physician, a small business owner, which is their worst nightmare, because that's the type of mentality that will potentially, and in my opinion, fix a lot of this finger on the scale of the insurance company, the government. I mean, this is what they wanted. They wanted someone to go in there and just create mandates to put doctors, private doctors, out of business, to move the scale, move the needle towards socialized medicine. And they were well on their way to doing it. They could care less. I'm done with, these poor patients. So there's people just dying because of they're the first time they've been covered by Obamacare. You know, that's probably 1% of the people who have Obamacare are the people who got Medicaid. That's what they got. They did not get a private insurance plan. They got Medicaid on steroids. And those that could see a doctor, good luck with that. They got some help. Awesome. But you know what? They would have gotten help anyway. Had they walked into any ER with a catastrophic disease and plugged into the system. The whole EMTALA situation, the Emergency Medical Treatment and Active Labor Act, is since 1986, is the baseline, the catchment for anybody in our country, whether they're a citizen or not, to get health care if they're in emergent situations. And irregardless of their ability to pay. So all the nonsense that they spewed about people are dying on the street, it was never happening. I mean, it's time for people to understand truth versus fiction on this thing. Don't cry tears for the insurance companies, because they got paid. Their whole stock prices went up after the Affordable Care Act was passed. When they tell you they're having, you know, they're not making profit and they're going, well, they're not going out of business. They've been buying each other up. They bought up all of the mid-size and small insurance plans. They're gone. They now have the ability to, yes, they can't kick you off for having a pre-existing condition, but they can make it hell really hard for you to get treatment through pre-certifications and changing the medical parameters of what gets covered and what doesn't. So they've been playing games all along. So the only thing that they were pissed about is that the gravy train left the station, because they were getting paid whether or not they had enough people in their pot, enough patients to buy their insurance plan or not. The government made them whole. So they can cry, we're supposed to make this X amount of bucks, and the government picked up the tab. Well, when that stopped, that's when they started crying foul and how they were poor them and they wanted to leave the insurance markets. It's, I mean, let's just be honest. It's all about money for the insurance companies. It's not about health care. It's not about these warm and fuzzy commercials of them helping you when you're sick. They could give a damn. Trust me. And when things really should be covered, they don't cover them. Or they make you jump through hoops, or they let you do it, but then just don't pay the physician after. I finally won a case after 2 years of a patient that I did surgery on 2 years ago. I'm ecstatic. 2 years, though, it's a damn good thing that I have found a resource, a free service for doctors who will go and literally fight your case for you. We actually had to take this to the government to get this paid. And then the letter we got back at the end of all this nonsense was the same reason we asked to do the case in the first place, because we met the criteria. And that was within what was in the letter. Oh, because you did, you know, antibiotics and nasal steroids and you treated the patient multiple times and they failed medical management. Okay, we'll let you do. Well, I said that 2 years ago. That's why we asked to do the case and we got the pre-certification. They just played games. So imagine, multiply that by thousands of doctors across the country who deal with that, and you get a sense of our dissatisfaction with the system, because it's nothing to do with patient care. And there's a lot of money. 1/6 of the economy is a hell of a lot of money. Let's be honest about that. Who stands to gain? That's my question.
You know, Dr. Price has and has presented to Congress an alternative plan many times.
Multiple.
Do you think he'll be able, because of his position as Human Services Secretary, to take bits and pieces of his plan and now put them into Obamacare? And instead of, you know, I personally, I don't care what they call it. I'd like to get Affordable Care Act and Obamacare off of it and call it slam dunk insurance or something. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of hearing it.
I know.
And but anyway, my question is, you think he can take parts, bits and pieces, and
that czar can do whatever the czar wants to do, unelected, unencumbered, doesn't have to ask anybody for anything, just write it. That's what they were scared about. So here's somebody who understood the crafting of the legislation, who really knew from a gut level and from a practicing level and from an ethical level, this shit didn't work. Excuse my French. It doesn't work. It's not about patients and doctors. It's about collecting taxes, and it's about control, and it's about social engineering. Under Sebelius, she's the one that created the mandate for contraception. That's her, because she wanted to, you know, espouse a left-wing agenda. And coverage for whether or not you're man or woman or have a child or not, covering things like, you know, child dental and all sort of stuff, that's her.
Okay, on the other side of the coin, though, it's scary to think a Democrat in 4 years or 6 years could come in and change it all back, right?
Well, if you get rid of the taxes, you've lost the money driving power of this thing, the engine of this thing. It's a tax. I didn't realize hooked into capital gains tax. It's hooked into payroll tax. It's hooked into the mandate tax. Do you know how many taxes are associated with this thing? It's a tax scheme to suck money from small business, from patients, from doctors, and hospitals, to a degree. I mean, they had to jump through hoops in order to get their money, which of course is on the backs of patients. And again, I'll just give you that brief overview of what that means. If you're a Medicare patient and you get admitted into a hospital as an outpatient or as an ambulatory patient, and they do things to you, they send you for labs, they do blood work, they write medications, you will not have Medicare pay for that because you're not in the right silo. You have to be designated as an inpatient in order for Medicare to pay for those medications in-house, in hospital. So all these seniors are coming out. I mean, they're pretty sick too. This is my thing. You have to be half dead to be an inpatient now. So you can have a stroke, you can have a transient ischemic attack, but otherwise pretty stable. but it's still a major thing that happened to you. But depending on your vitals and the diagnosis code, you would end up as an observation patient in that hospital. Even though you have a potentially catastrophic situation, it's based on the parameters set by the government. I actually worked for a company. This is why I can tell you all these things, because at some point or another, I've been working in this system and I know how it works. So we had to train for a month to understand what to tell the doctors when they called our company to tell them how to admit somebody. They were inpatient, they were observation, whatever. It took a month to figure out how to designate and what you needed to do to figure out what the government was asking. And of course, it changes every so often. After you understand the process, it changes, and then the criteria changes altogether. So the hospitals, think of all the money, all the infrastructure, all the layers that have to go on board just to treat a patient. It's no longer just the doctor and the patient. It's the doctor, it's the nurse technician, it's the pharmacy technician, it's the physician assistant, it's the case manager. I mean, the list goes on. And I've been away, doing some talks for doctors and for medical students, which are really, it's amazing what's out there. But all of those ancillary layers, 16-1 is the administrative layer to the doctor. 16 administrators to a doctor. Most of them are designed to gatekeep, to make sure you code properly, to make sure you chart properly, to make sure you're seeing your 50 patients a night or more if you're a house doctor or an in-house physician. And the doctors have become technicians. And somebody made a very astute observation that the whole point of doctors in this particular kind of system is, you know, it's about controlling us. We're the drivers of this engine, of the money, of the pharmaceutical industry. Everything we do makes money for somebody else. And they've tried, and they've almost succeeded in monetizing doctors. That's what our job is now. It's not to take care of patients. It's not the art of medicine. It's to make a corporation money or to save the government money. But your fiduciary responsibility all of a sudden, it's not to the patient, especially if you take a paycheck from these situations. You know, if you're not solo, if you're not running your own office or your own shop, you are making money for somebody else. And the golden collar, you know, you make $300,000, $400,000, whatever you're making on salary, trust me, you're working for it. It's only going to get worse, because once the government steps on the hospital, ratchets down their payment, their reimbursement, it's coming for you next. What do you think is going to happen? You're going to be working weekends. You're going to be working 80, 90 hours a week. Yes, you may be overseeing a physician assistant or a nurse practitioner, whatever you're doing, but you're still responsible. And you're still working harder for that money. And at some point, you're the lowest hanging fruit. And you're the one, they get rid of you and just add more mid-level practitioners because they're cheaper. And they'll do what they're told because the training is different. This is the system. This is population-based medicine. And I was on the dais with a physician who now recruits doctors and makes sure they have contracts that help them in this type of system. He thinks it's the future, and he's all hot for globalism. And my whole mentality is completely, so it was an interesting talk, because I followed him and I kind of let him know exactly what I was thinking about that situation. It's not healthcare, and I don't want to be a technician. And doctors and patients now are at a crossroads. And after the break, we'll talk about that a little bit more. But ultimately, you have to decide whether you want to go to a physician who's got a fiduciary responsibility to the hospital, who's following algorithms and population-based guidelines, or you want to go to a physician who's like Dr. Welby or somebody who gets to know you and treats you as an individual. On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. So before the break, I was trying to give you the lowdown on our system that they're trying to bring online. It's systems-based medicine is what he called it. And that systems-based medicine is standardization of everything, of the care that you receive as a patient. So he was giving an example of a group of physicians, all, you know, specialists, whatever it is, neurologists, ENT, whatever. And it was a particular, it was a surgical group. So they decided, they got together, and they decided they were going to standardize what it takes to do a particular procedure, what instruments you use, what medications you use, the whole thing like a cookbook. So if someone goes for a particular procedure, no matter what the doctor, whoever the doctor is, they're all going to do it and use the same things in the same way. And if a doctor decides they want to put the patient on a different antibiotic or try a different technique, they were going to be called to question by the group to justify changing their system. You know, my whole take on that was, who would want to be in a system like that? And he used another example of a group where they had five surgeons, one surgeon operates all, they rotate, one surgeon operates all day. Who the hell wants to be in the OR all day? You're just a technician. I love the OR. It's a great time. We have a great time. I love doing what I do, but there's no way I want to be in there for 8 hours a day. That's done. So one person would do that all day. The other person would see clinic patients all day. Another person might do consults. I mean, they would divide the labor. And then they would, every day you would do something else. And there's one person off, you know, per day. One person would be on call.
Wouldn't you like to be the patient that gets the at 4 o'clock in the afternoon?
Well, yeah, that's a good point. But their mentality was, you know, I can plug in anybody into the system. It doesn't matter who they are. It'll work the same way. Well, what happens when the patient was with the doctor the entire time and then something happens and they're on call or whatever, they get a different physician? So where's the trust between the doctor and the patient? You're just plugging in a technician just to get the job done. There's no collegiality with that. There's no warmth between the doctor and the patient. How can you be warm when you're on your eighth hour of a case or, you know, eighth hour of an OR day? I mean, do they have somebody go and talk to the patient after? The doctor just does case to case to case, doesn't even talk to the patient after. I mean, just think about how these efficiencies get put online. Yeah, you can do volume that way, but where's the warmth? Where's the art? Medicine is just not a science. It's an art. And sometimes you get in there and you try a different technique, or it's the anatomy's different. You come with a different fix for it. That's the fun of it. It's thinking. There's no thinking here. It's do it our way. Do it by the book. We know what's best for you because we've decided what the parameters should be. And the bottom line is when you fall outside those parameters, there's a stick. It's not all carrots here. It's a stick.
As I've said many, many times or asked you many, many times, I would assume as long as you've been practicing that everybody that comes in and you examine is exactly like the person right before them. There's no change. Everybody's the same.
Nope. Yeah, but that's, I actually spend the time. And every feedback I get from a patient is, no one ever told me that. No one ever explained it to me. I didn't understand. Thank you. That's what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm supposed to look you in the eye, not type on a computer screen. I'm supposed to not write a prescription just because you ask for it, just to get you out of my office. That's not what medicine's supposed to be about. And quite frankly, it's cheaper when you actually spend the time to have a rapport, to listen, take a history, and actually listen to the patient. Yesterday, I saw a patient who came in because she thought she had sinus problems. You know, complaining of congestion and snoring, and when I actually took her history, it looks like she has diabetes and it's uncontrolled, and I ended up calling her primary care doctor, drawing labs, and sending her immediately to see that doctor. She's like a blurry vision and urinating all the time, and, you know, everything's dry, my eyes are dry, everything's dry. I could have just blown all of that off and just, here's a prescription, I think you have a sinus infection. That's the difference between actually being a doctor and, you know, just getting it done. You lose that spark of humanity, then you're no longer a doctor, and the whole healthcare profession becomes, I don't even know how to describe it, except for when you don't hit a norm, you're going to be warehoused in some way, and you're not going to like it. And they're trying to change the culture of medical education. I spoke with medical students. I did 2 weeks of of talks, keynote addresses, and just spending time with the medical students and listening to them. The Benjamin Rush Institute was the conference that I spoke at. And these particular, the whole point of the Benjamin Rush Institute is to champion individuality. So it's libertarian. It's about everybody's different. You should be able to practice medicine the way you see fit. The whole old-fashioned medicine, let's put it in a nutshell. And these students were describing to me how they have to hide who they are when they're in medical school. They basically can't even say that they're a member of the Benjamin Rush Institute because they get grief because they're not trying to help the poor. And why do they even want to make money? Because, you know, it's wrong to want to do that. I mean, it was just amazing. It was social justice warrior superimposed on healthcare medical education. And they're literally, I mean, they come after them on social media. And this is just not a passive thing. I had to counsel a patient, one of the students, who was so upset that she wanted to give back to her country, and she was getting grief because, what is it she told me? The Koch brothers have given money to a subsidiary of the organization. I think it's not even Benjamin Rush Institute. It's somebody that they work with. The Koch brothers have given money to them. So she's losing classmates who want to go and help her, you know, deliver care to a, you know, somewhere in Africa. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I thought, it's not even a one-to-one. It's like a three-degree of separation kind of thing. It's cutting your nose off to spite your face. So you're going to not go to help somebody because you think the Koch brothers are giving money to a subsidiary or a vendor of the Benjamin Rush. I mean, that just, it doesn't even make any kind of sense, but the duress that she felt that she was under, and would it mess up her medical career? I mean, I've never experienced anything like that as a medical student. So imagine trying to learn your medical student things. You know, you're going to class, you're doing what you need to do, but you have this other pressure from your classmates to just be part of a hive, a Borg hive, literally, where they are indoctrinating people. I thought the general education system was bad, but they are doing their damnedest to create, to change, you know, it's social engineering, basically, on every level. Now I understand, too, why they're going after the education secretary, because if she's trying to break that system up and she's trying to give people a choice, and she's not saying you can't have public education. It's just that if you want a choice, you can do something else. These guys don't believe in choice. It's not like you can live and let live with these folks. It's their way or no way. And if you don't want to do what they want you to do, they will burn you down. They will put you out of business. They will come after you physically, definitely emotionally. But they don't, I could care less about what they think. They don't matter to me. And as soon as people make up their minds to stop being cowed by this mob and this mob mentality, we're going to be free tomorrow. We somehow, silence allows them to become more vocal and more annoying than they actually are. I don't even think there's that many of them, but they get the platform of the media. They get out there and demonstrate. And it's not even that many people, but they're just loud and obnoxious. I think we need to stand up. If you don't agree with that, even if you do agree with it, you don't have the right to stop someone from entering a school. You don't have the right to put them out of business. Just don't use their products. Don't go to their store. I mean, but they don't want that. They want to put you out of business. It's just a different mentality. But when they start getting into the violence, when they start getting into physical intimidation, they should be picked up. And that's the problem I see going on in the country right now, is that we're being civil and they're being a mob, and there's no consequences. So when someone spits at somebody or throws some disgusting item at them, they're not getting arrested, and it just emboldens them to get worse. So, you know, I don't put myself in a position where I have to deal with these folks, but if I did, trust me, I wouldn't be sitting back and letting them do whatever they want to do. Never. On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
health insurance was the promise of Obamacare. But for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose. And with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. It's amazing. I don't think many people would think that the medical profession is becoming politicized. But how do you... It's by design. You need people to want to be in this system. You create a false narrative and you somehow mind control people to think that they're victims or that someone took it from them or they're in a position to make it equal. You know, what does that even mean? We're not the same. We're all different. So, as I said, I've said multiple times, you have a skill that I don't. I have a skill that someone else doesn't. We all have gifts. Our job is to find out what they are and do them. That's how you have fulfillment. If I were a street sweeper, I'd be the best street sweeper in the universe because that's what I want to do.
You're just going to say what you are. Now, you know, I think, and I'd love your thoughts on it, but it comes back to the one word that I've said over and over for every show. It doesn't matter what show we're doing, medicine or immigration or whatever it is. It doesn't matter. It comes back to one word, and that's education. And the public has to get off their butt and start educating themselves. There's no excuse.
Oh, I agree. Especially since what we're hearing and seeing is complete. It's fabrication. It is, you have...
Fake news?
Absolutely. On every level. I mean, you think about what's going on with the National Security Advisor stepping down. And you think about how this all unfolded. This is, they've been gunning for that guy from the get-go. But in order to get him, they had to commit a crime. So you have leaking to the newspapers of conversations that are private and that are national security level. That's unbelievable. Or how can people know what the president said or did or didn't say to a world leader? That's never been done before. So in order to try to, and I guess now, you know, I can kind of see the Democratic side of that leak from the DNC. What they said was pretty, it was awful, and they got, their mask got taken away and they got exposed. But in the scheme of things, if it's a private conversation, but no, actually, you know what? It was internet. So those were all emails, essentially. These are conversations that were tapped. That's a little bit different. I take it back. I thought, you know, they maybe have a little bit of an argument, but they actually don't. Since it was internet-based, these are emails going back and forth. They weren't on secured servers, which is their problem. They're dumb enough to do what they do. That's an issue. But this is a bigger, this is a national security issue. And it's obvious that the people who were there before are sabotaging the people that are there now. They want what they want, and they will destroy the government to get it. Nobody has a problem with that. You just want to win at all costs. Aside from the fact that Hollywood and the music industry and all these other puppets are clamoring to kill somebody, and they're not getting picked up. I thought it was a threat that you'd be visited by the Secret Service and be picked up if you have a threat against the President of the United States, isn't it? These aren't subtle threats.
Madonna saying she'd like to blow up the White House?
That's not even half of it. Someone else said that they should do what they did to JFK. So, I mean, this is not a benign thing, and no one's calling and no one's getting picked up. I don't understand that exactly. You actually have to stop playing patty cake with these people and pick them up. Follow the law. If we're in this law and order situation that we are supposedly trying to bring online, then let it be across the board. And I'm not talking about, you know, First Amendment rights. These are terroristic threats.
You know, when someone comes out and says some of the things that have been said on these award shows and all of this other stuff, I'm like you. Pick them up.
Yeah, they're not just benign things. They're telling people hurt somebody.
Yeah.
Kill somebody. The lady who wore the Trump dress at the Grammy Awards, I don't know if you heard about that.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Well, her music sales went up like over 5,000%, which I thought was fabulous.
But she also got death.
Oh, yes, she did. They wanted to kill her. I mean, what kind of people are these? These are...
Damn, don't ever wear your scrubs in here again. That's stupid.
Yeah, it is. But this is the level that we're dealing with. These are not... live and let live. I mean, it's again, words matter, language matters. And they've co-opted the word liberal, and they're actually totalitarian. So they're putting all of this icing on this rotten mindset. They are my way or no way. I know what's best. It's very elitism. It's very elite.
Which supposedly they oppose.
Yeah, well, of course. And they're also against the... you know, the power structure. But they're actually working to create it and to perpetuate it. They're on the side of the same corporate interests, the same global interests that want to destroy individuality. This is supposedly what they want. And my other, which is really fascinating to me too, is the feminist aspect or angle of this. They are literally joining with and getting into bed with people who are pro Sharia law. And people need to understand what Sharia law really is. It is against women. It's against freedom. It's against individuality. And it stands for killing people who are not Muslim. That's what it is. What's wrong with you? So you want to wear something. I don't care what people wear, but you don't ask. I'm not wearing it. And you're not going to hurt me because I want to do something else. There's women are being sold into slavery in these countries. What's wrong with you?
Every woman in the United States should be at any Islamic door trying to kick them out of the country if they're subscribing to the Quran. And the Quran says it, you know, and then women are nothing in the Quran.
No.
You know.
And children are sex objects.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we're talking about child sex slavery, women. What's going on in Europe is a travesty, and our media is literally not talking about it. Please, whoever's listening to this podcast show, just do a search on what's going on in Sweden or Germany or any of these Western European countries, what's happening with girls, European girls, women, and young boys. They're being attacked. And these people are, if they're being arrested, they're not staying in jail very long. But this is a different mindset. They believe you can take a child bride at age 9. They believe that. And this is, and it's, the Islamic world is not monolithic. That's another, you know, ignorant thing that these people are thinking. It's not all the same. There's Shiite, there's Sunni, there's Wahhabism, there's... The Shiites are not the problem. That's not who's coming into the country. It's the Sunni, Wahhabists. Those are the ones who are the... It's a political system. It's not just a religion. It's a political system. It's an economic system. It is a social systems construct. And it doesn't jibe with Western values. It just doesn't.
It's a cancer. The reason I say that is that it's very sneaky. It's very slow. But it grows, and it grows on, it's like in Paris. Now, I've only been to Paris once, and over Christmas, basically. And I would have thought Paris and their stores and their streets would have been decorated to the hilt. But no, they can't, because that would offend the Muslims that have basically taken over France, or Paris particularly.
Doesn't anybody have a problem with that? It's not... live and let live. It's you offend me, so you have to stop doing what you do.
Yeah.
No one seems to complain about that.
Well, we don't want to offend me.
I don't understand that, but you... I mean, there's a website, I forgot the website I went to, but it's really fascinating because they go through the Quran, through the different surah, and they talk about what it really means. If you appease them, if you say, well, I'll be nice, they don't, it's not a Christian mindset. They don't respect that. They think you're weak, and they get worse. This is the difference in the mindset between, you know, somebody who is into Sharia law, into the political side of Islam versus a Christian. It's a completely different mindset. Niceness is weakness. You need to be taken over because you can't defend or protect yourself. This is, it's just historically too, not to get into too much politics, but the whole Crusades, they talk about, they think, or they make it sound like the Christians did it first. It was a defensive mode. They were attacked first. But that's not what history says. That's not the education of our population is somehow we did it to somebody else. We should stand down. We're bad people. The Western mindset, they don't care what color you are, black, green, whatever. We need to be folded in to this system. And everybody that's in power, who's a globalist, is part of that mindset. Open borders is part of it. Changing the education system, changing the healthcare system, having an allegiance to something that's not the United States, the UN, and all these other transnational corporate constructs. TPP was a disaster. Nobody knows, no one talks about it, but our whole healthcare system, what medications we were allowed to prescribe to our patients, how much they were going to cost, was going to be set by an offshore corporate entity, a pharmaceutical company. And you know what they do when they get a chance to control something? They raise the price. So there is one drug that went from $600 to $4,500. It's the drug that they use to reverse when you have an overdose of a narcotic like heroin. It used to be Narcan, nothing, you know, not much money. Now $4,500 for a dose? Are you kidding me? This is what happens when you let greed control the system. And they've tainted practically everybody in our government. Anybody who's taking money from an entity like Soros or a government, they're talking about this guy messing with, what is it, the, I don't know if it's the Hatch Act, I forget what it's called, they try to get Flynn out on. They had to pick up half of Congress because they're meeting with foreign governments, they're taking money. The whole Clinton machine was about taking money from foreon entities and working on their behalf.
The Logan Bill.
Logan Act, right. No one's gotten nailed for that in the whole history of it. And it's been going, and it still goes on, but it's all right for the goose, but not for the gander. I mean, it's total hypocrisy. On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. You know, I wish that we didn't have to talk about things that are on a political, social level, but it is so integrated. It is so interwoven. And it's happened subtly over, 20, 30 years maybe?
Do you think maybe that's the plan? They, like you said, it's all so intertwined that medicine and all of the yelling and screaming about the immigration thing and the ban and this and that and laws and you wonder who holds the shovel that digs up these laws that haven't been seen in 100 years, or
it's chaos. They want to create chaos, and in that, bring their sort of order out of chaos. That is the Cloward Piven Hegelian dialectic. Look those words up because that's what's going on right now. And you demonize your opposition. You make fun of them. I mean, everything they're doing, you can see it happening with the administration. Unfortunately, I think he's got people in there that are working against him as well internally, which makes it seem like it's, you know, it's not cohesive and the message is not consistent. I'll give the last administration credit. They were, everybody was on message at all times, whether it was true or not. And they said it so often, they actually believed what they were saying. That's not going on in this administration, but you also have, I'd say, professional agitators who are working on the outside or get rena mobs. They're getting paid for. And the media is working in tandem with them to amplify it. And parts of the government like it. They want to go back to, we were moving, Dave, towards an absolute paradigm shift in the country. Let's face it. All they needed to do was to change the immigration law so that everybody got legal status. That would change the entire electorate for generations. They already have the education system because the public education system doesn't educate anymore, it indoctrinates. The healthcare system was well on its way to being destroyed through Obamacare. The labor platform or the underpinning was being run by global concerns. The whole Chamber of Commerce is all about globalism because they want cheap labor. And it doesn't matter whether you're Democrat or Republican, they still want the same thing. The Democrats want the global community to have free reign in the United States because they all can be eventual constituents and keep them in power. The business side of it wants the cheap labor so they can get cheap labor. They're working in tandem. They both want the same thing. That's why they keep bringing up this immigration reform crap, which at some point has legalization or a path to legalization. We have to have a country. There is nothing wrong with having a border and to be able to decide who comes into your country. It's not racist. It's not, you know, xenophobic. It is called having a country. And the people that they deemed, and it wasn't like they can never come in. It was a 3-month moratorium so you can evaluate it. These are failed states. They're not countries in the classic sense. They're run by all sorts of militia and God knows what. And they can't even tell you if the visas and the passports are right. They're making them up. They said practically everybody from Syria has a fake passport. Anytime Assad says, you know, there are terrorists in the people coming over, and you're like, let's let them all in. That's just stupid. For what purpose? So it's not about keeping people out. It's about knowing who's coming in. It's a different mentality, but I don't think it was rolled out well. That's what I mean by people sabotaging from the inside. That was just stupid, the way it was rolled out. But his right to do it as president of the United States is unquestioned. And what that court did is unconstitutional. He's not a smart, he's not a dumb guy. So he read the actual preamble of that law. And it says, without any fuzziness, the president of the United States has the ability and the power to decide who comes into our country and can close the borders at any time. And he's not the first one to do it. Jimmy Carter did it. Nobody says anything about that. And then they have quotes, video of these supposed Congress people who are, oh, this is the worst thing ever, who were saying the same thing. When was it? This was the Vietnamese. It was Schumer on some Asian country that they wanted to not have people come from. They've done it before. And until unless you know who's coming in, it doesn't make sense to let... They've already announced that they're bringing people in through the refugees. They've said it on multiple occasions. It's not like they... Oh, they never said they were going to... Yes, they said they were going to do it. And then the crap about there's no evidence that any of these countries had people who committed crimes here. And it's a laundry list from Somalia and this and the... Give me a break.
You know, on top of that, I was... The figure that I was totally blown away with, do you know how many people come into the United States daily?
I don't know.
By air, by boat, by anything.
A ton.
Not just come in. Take a guess.
I don't know, 100,000?
328,000.
A day?
A day. A day. And you're, you know, they're telling me, we're getting enough bad people in anyway. So I'm like you. All I want is to know who's coming. The best we can screen them.
You have to have some method. There's nothing wrong with that.
Nothing.
But they always use the same argument. They show a poor child or a woman, and it's always women and children.
Yeah.
But in actuality, most of the people that have come in are men. You know, military-age men. That whole thing from the southern border, they categorize a child up to age 30. So they were mostly teens and young male adults coming through. They show little kids in the front of this to make it look good, but that's not who's the majority of the people coming into the country. No one has a problem with 1% of the people coming in being Christian. That wasn't a problem for anybody. That's a religious test to me. Why? They're definitely one of the people, one of the groups that are being destroyed, but they weren't allowed to come in. Nothing being said about that. I mean, just do your own due diligence and stop listening to people telling you how you're supposed to think. You don't have a right to come into the country. That is not part of the Constitution.
It's a privilege. it should be like a person should look. Nobody has a right just to walk into my house.
No.
If I'm there. Now, if I invite them in, that's a privilege.
Agreed.
And this is our house. And you don't have a right from Somalia or from
anywhere. From it's true. And that the argument of it's against our Constitution is completely ridiculous.
Yeah. I was a bit frustrated before you got here this morning.
Well, the fact that we can talk about it is a good thing. And the fact that they're enforcing it now is a good thing. They act like picking people off the street with, you know, they're just, if you look like you're not, you know, if you look, you're from the south, southern border, or from a Latin American country, they're just picking you up. That's not what's going on. These people actually have gone through the system. They have a final order, and they're supposed to be deported, and they just haven't been enforcing it. So I'm just done with the lying just to get your way. Just be honest. From an immigrant standpoint, from an immigrant community standpoint, I think they live like a Chicago kind of situation where they get preyed upon and they can never get anybody to help them. They let these people stay in their neighborhoods. They're not supposed to be there. God knows what kind of system they're running outside the system. I'm done with their paying taxes crap. Their remittances are the number one moneymaker in Mexico, more than oil. It makes more for them than oil. It is in their interest to keep their people on our soil because they make money off of them. And I find that to be reprehensible. Fix your country so you don't have to outsource your people to make money for your government. And Mexico's got issues. It's a failed state too, if you want to be honest. You've got gangs running complete parts of the country. There are black Mexicans, African descent Mexicans are treated like crap in their country, and they have the unmitigated gall to talk to us. I'm done with that. So do your own due diligence. It's amazing when you start reading and you start looking at the wider world out there about what's going on. And I'm all about helping people, but not at the expense of my safety or my country's safety. How can we help people if we get overrun and we can't afford our own social network? I talk to senior citizens on a daily basis. I went on a show and they call my office and the stories you hear, they can barely afford to, you know, buy their medication and their food. There should never be any senior citizen in our country who can't afford to live in a decent manner while someone's coming in getting $4,000, $8,000 a month to take in a refugee. That's money that's being taken from a senior. This is not to put blame on anybody, whatever, but it's a fact. And as long as we, I think, are preoccupied and allow other people to think for us, we're going to have a problem. And it's all about choices now. Choices about how do you want your pocketbook to, how you want the money to be doled out of your own purse. I want control over my money. I want to decide what and whom I give it to. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm not going to apologize for that. Somebody deciding how my money gets divvied up, how my health care gets divvied up, how I should think about that and I should like it, I take offense to that. I'm not going to do that. And I'm not racist. I'm not sexist. I'm not anything-ist. I care about the human race. I care about my safety. And I'm working hard for what I get. I'm not interested in someone taking it from me. On that note, thank you for listening to Medicine on Call. In the next couple of weeks, we're going to have guests to talk about privacy, which I think is extremely important in this situation. And we're going to start talking about more solutions. So I hope you have a great week and stay safe.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.